The lights would still be paraffin lamps, candles to go to bed with.
Father Davy took his bucket down to the stream, and he used to walk down to the stream with his buckets, take the fresh water back up, and that was used for cooking, drinking.
No running water, so you got your water from the pump, you met people there. Yeah, you used to go up there, pump the old handle.
We had a portable zinc bath. In the summer, we bathed in the wash house, the outside shed.
No running water, no electricity, no mains gas, no sewerage, no flush toilets, no fridges, no showers, tin baths. Hell on earth to modern ears. But we're not talking medieval here, just 70 or 80 years ago. It was still, as Vic Borrell recalls, quite literally the Dark Ages in many homes in and around Little Cawthorpe.
Very dark. For us kids, it was scary sometimes. Going up to bed with a candle, and there was a draught and it blew the candle out using in the dark. You know, you had to be so careful you didn't knock the candle over, cause a fire. Same with an oil lamp. Knock it over, you'd have fire straight away. There's dangerous times, really. The Aladdin lamp is an ordinary oil lamp, but the burner had an element that used to glow, and it used to vaporise the fuel better and give a brighter light. There's no smoke from it.
The late Jean Mabelson grew up in one such house in Wood Lane. Jean's memories, written for the 20th century Legbourne book, are brought to life here by Jenny Cartwright.
We used candles for light, except in the main room where we had a paraffin lamp. The make was Aladdin and gave a good light. It had to be filled daily, the wick trimmed and the mantle replaced if broken. It was exciting going to bed the first time without a candle.
Maureen Lill arrived in Louth at the very beginning of the electric era, 1939. She moved to Cawthorpe in 1958, but even then life could be very basic.
I mean, we had a septic tank. There was no main sewerage.
What about lighting and things like that?
No village light. There never has been village lights at all.
And what about domestic lighting in the houses?
Yes, we had electricity, but a lot had gas.
It was paraffin, not gas, that played a big part in bringing light to Legbourne Church, as Albert Moore described in this extract from his memories, read by his son Paul.
I remember carrying water from the pump to the church for the annual spring clean, the water being heated in large saucepans on paraffin stoves in the belfry. The lighting was also by paraffin lamps, which had to be filled and trimmed weekly.
For many in the mid-20th century, and especially on farms, hurricane lamps were the order of the day. Not a phrase you'd have heard from a real yellow belly.
They didn't call them hurricane lamps in Lincolnshire. They're hurricane lamps. My uncle used to say to me, go and fetch the hurricane lamp, boy. Get it lit, we'll go and look round the horses. I can remember doing that.
However you said it, hurricane lamps had all kinds of uses.
Most of the youth of the village gathered every night and weekend at the seat, situated where the village notice board is now. Games were played, such as fox hunting and paper chases, and during the frosty winter evenings we would gather with the men of the village at the hollows, each bringing a hurricane lamp for skating and sliding on the moat that was there.
Nighttime reading in those dark days was a big problem.
Very difficult. Often the fire gave more light than the lamp did, but I can remember we had two lamps. Because Father did a lot of reading. He used to have one on the table next to him and then one on the kitchen table.
An open fire wasn't just a welcoming sight. It gave light, and it was the only source of heat.
A fire, a back boiler to heat the radiators and give you some hot water. But some houses hadn't even that. Some had just a boiler at the side of the fireplace. That's all the hot water they'd got.
I mean, you used to sit round the fire, didn't you?
That's right. Sit down the fire with your coat on.
And a toasting fork in the fire.
That's it, yeah. Oh, it was good, that was. Best toast there was.
Heat for bodies and for food. If you think cooking's a chore now, imagine this little scenario, with no electricity and no mains gas.
The fire was in a cast-iron range with an oven to the left side and a boiler to the right. My mother baked cakes and pastries and cooked meals with no temperature gauge and never seemed to burn anything. When electricity came, the side oven was only used for drying kindling, except when it was used at pig-killing time.
In Margaret Hallgarth's youth in Legborn, electricity was something magical you read about in stories. It was wax and oil for lighting, and fire for heat and water.
I mean, it hadn't come through the village before, you see. I don't know what they'd do today without it. Washing machines, I mean, there was nothing like that.
What did you do on wash day?
My father lit the copper, and I know he lit the fire under that and got it going for mother. And we always had it on a Monday, and then it was flat iron on a Tuesday, and she'd probably bake on a Wednesday. But it was all done by a range in the living room.
Wash day was a long day, even if you were lucky enough to have a water pump in your garden.
It took all day on a Monday to do the washing. We had a water pump in the garden about 10 yards from the house door and 15 yards from the wash house. It was even further to the coal house where the copper was. This pump, which gave sweet drinking water, was for the use of two other houses, so our neighbours had to carry their water even further. My mother washed in a large wooden shed with a corrugated roof called the wash house. It was 3 yards away from the house and was also used for salting the pig, storing potatoes and cycles, and bathing in the warm weather.
Mary Smith's wash day memories, read here by April Fixter. The copper, a brick or concrete housing with a cast iron or aluminium water holder inside and a fire underneath, was at the centre of operations.
The first thing on wash day was to fill the copper with water, add the whitewashing and persil, then light the fire. When the washing had boiled, it was transferred to the wash house. By midday, all the clotheslines stretching over 20 yards round the top of the garden were full and hedges covered as well. When the washing was dry, it had to be folded and the starch items damped by sprinkling water by hand from a basin and left to settle.
It was an even longer day when you included drying and ironing.
Mother usually ironed after tea on a table. She never had an ironing board. She had 3 or 4 flat irons which stood upright on a frame tied to a front of a glowing red fire. She had to keep changing them as they had cooled and made sure that they were clean.
In the 30s and 40s in Cawthorpe, just getting the water was a real headache.
Dolly Davy and Father Davy, who lived at the entrance to Legburn Abbey there, there was no running water. Father Davy took his bucket down to the stream, and he used to walk down to the stream with his buckets, take the fresh water back up, and that was used for cooking, drinking, toilets.
And this is the water from what everybody knows as the splash?
Yes. People went to the pond, which is now the pond, and the 7 springs came up out of the pond, and there were the most wonderful beds of watercress. And of course the villagers, some even in those days, would go and get the water from the springs.
The water supply for Hafham and parts of Cawthorpe was supplied by well in the Hafham pastures. Charlie Coggle had to go down every so often and clean the well out. He said at the bottom there's a stream running through. But then, well, later, there was a pump near the springs, electric pump, that Jock Whiteman installed, and it pumped water out the beck to Hafham Slates. Fred Nags, that was his job, to come down every day and start the pump up. Well, then he used to go to the pub, like, for a drink. By the time he got back, he used to switch the pump off, if he remembered.
Rainwater was favourite for washing, both clothes and people.
We had 2 large tubs outside to collect the rainwater. It was lovely soft water for washing, as the pump water was very hard. The rainwater often had to be strained in summer when it contained gnat larvae.
And when do you think this might be? The 1800s, maybe?
Everything had to be brought from the village pump, all the fresh water. People used to call, even out the village, I've known them, pop in and get a bottle of fresh water, because it's lovely water. Far better water than Louth.
Actually, much of Legborn relied on the village pump for its water right up until the early 1950s. Hank Green's family were luckier than most. They could see the village pump from their house.
No running water, so you got your water from the pump, you met people there. Yeah, you just go up there, pump the old handle, I mean, we only lived in Post Office Row, so it wasn't far, but if anybody, any distance, but they maybe come down in horse and cart or whatever, and yeah. Some of them would bring churns down and fill up.
Bath time wasn't exactly a relaxing experience. For one thing, you had to fetch the water in buckets and then heat it up in the copper.
We had a portable zinc bath. In the summer, we bathed in the wash house, the outside shed. I usually bathed first, and then the water was topped up with more hot, and Mother bathed. Father was last. Not very hygienic by today's standards.
Oh, in front of the fire. One man got in it, he'd get out, the other one get in it, same water and everything.
If you were really unlucky, you were the youngest in a big family.
The last one, yes, that's true and all.
At least you could have the bath in a warm kitchen. Going to the toilet was a different matter altogether, before running water and the wonders of flushing. Basically, a large bucket under a seat in an outhouse. My grandfather's had a double seat. You could go with a friend. Vic Borrell remembers them well.
If you was lucky, there was two. One for the little kids and the other for the men. Then you had to go round the back, undo the trapdoor and take the buckets out and put them on the garden and do what you like with them.
With some fine tomatoes.
Yeah. I'm afraid it didn't get done till it had to do, if you know what I mean.
Life at home at the fringes of living memory could be very hard and time-consuming, but the staples of life were plentiful. What you didn't buy, you grew or reared or bought directly from local farms, or traded or swapped. Karen Foxen says what didn't come out of the garden came from a rich variety of local sources around Legbourne.
Lots of beans. I used to go to Haffham Readings and get peas. You used to buy them by the sackful and then you had to blanch them. We, as children, used to steal them out the bath because that's where they were put before while they was doing them. Dad used to work for John Fenley. John used to go shooting and Dad used to come home with lots of pheasants. Somewhere along the line, he came home with lots of fish, which we had to gut, which I used to help. Also, there was somebody in the village that they were friends with who had a pig. And I do recall us making sausages in the kitchen.
Mother had chickens, so we had eggs, fresh eggs. Milkman used to come round with a pony and trap. You know, you used to buy what milk you wanted. And if we really run out, we had a farm at the bottom of the lane, and they would always let us have milk for exchange for probably a few eggs. I used to go gleaning. When the corn's left on the land, you could go and help yourself to feed the chickens you had. Mum and I used to go and get a bag of gleaning, as we called it. We had two pigs a year, which we'd kill ourselves through the war. So we never went without bacon and whatever.
Everybody kept pigs.
Anybody, if they got a bit of a ground, could put a pig sty and a pig in it. That was an annual event, usually. Everybody mucked in to help out, and it was, the coppers were boiling away first off in the morning. And the ladies were cutting it all up and getting it out. Yeah, taking your pig fries round and don't clean the plate. Grandad kept a pig, and I've had two since we've lived here. Pinky and Perky.
There'll be more on the pig tradition in a later programme. There were plenty of cows in the two villages too, on dairy farms or mixed farms with a dairy herd. Villagers didn't have to go far for their milk.
The milk was delivered twice a day, fresh from each milking, by the local farmer, on his bike or in a trap. In his large can hung measures with which he used to measure the milk out into our jug. The jug of milk stood in cold water in a cool pantry so that it did not go sour.
You used to go and fetch it in a metal container.
You definitely wouldn't be able to do that these days, would you?
No.
Dip your can in a churn of milk?
No, and walk down the road with it and then drink it.
We drank it on the way home.
Sometimes.
Diane Kingswood, the last voice you heard there. That was at the farm near the mill. At the other end of Legbourne was another milk supply, straight from the cow.
You got your milk from Mr. Stone's in the big house opposite the pump. Just go down there with your dilly can and help yourself in the... It was a little place attached to the property, part of it. but it was like a cool place.
So it was just cooled, nothing else happened to it, just cooled.
That's right, basically straight out the cow.
Back at the mill, it was both bread and milk.
Legburn boasted a working mill, which was owned by the Davy family, along with their farm. It was a great thrill to watch the majestic mill at work, to witness the sacks of flour being made, and to see the trout splashing around in the water wheel. Mrs. Davy, a robust lady, baked bread in her large kitchen for all and sundry, whilst her son, Norman, attended to the milk herd. Freddie Smith was the daily milkman, and he visited many houses with their daily pinter, pouring it from a pint steel ladle and a bucket.
Paul Moore recalls that even into the 60s and early 70s, in severe times, villagers could still get milk from his Uncle Eddie's farm.
Yeah, I mean, we weren't supposed to do that. That wasn't allowed, other than, I remember, it must have been heavy winter, and I remember we were cut off for 3 or 4 days, and obviously the cows were still giving milk. It was collecting in the vat. So we did. I think we served the whole village, really, for milk over those couple of days when we were snowed in. But the milk marketing board were quite strict about what you could do with the milk under normal circumstances.
For most other essentials, there was and still is a village shop. Pat Wright and Hank Green.
I can remember writing at school an essay saying that the village shop sold everything from a pin to a dress. And he used to deliver the groceries on a Friday. He used to take your order in and he would deliver them on a Friday.
Everything you wanted? A gentleman called Tommy Lamming was the first shopkeeper I can remember being there. There was a bus service, I think it was Thorns. And a gentleman called Mr. Searby lived down Willow Lane, had a horse and trap. So he would take your stuff into the market if you had anything to sell on the market. That's when livestock, chickens and rabbits and everything else were sold in the corn market.
And then, of course, there were deliveries. Nearly all suppliers in and around Louth would deliver the staples of life, an essential service in an era of very basic transport and very busy householders.
The butcher came from Louth twice a week. I can remember the meat van being drawn by a horse in the early days. In hot weather, the meat was a bit smelly, so Mother soaked it in vinegar and water to sweeten it.
Two butchers, F.R. Moore, the butcher, he come round, and there's a man called Phil Swaby, he used to come round. Later be Teasdale and Willerton come round with bread. Larders, they used to come round. International stores, they come round.
We had different people that used to come on different days of the week to drop things off. Obviously the milkman came regularly, but we had the most amazing butcher who came in a van. The meat was just literally chopped up in the back of the van and served. And one of my earliest memories was of him giving us the suet from around the kidneys to chew on whilst we were waiting for my mum to buy the meat. You'd be locked up for doing that to a small child now. But yeah, we were just given lumps of suet to chew on.
Pip Malloy. Trips into Louth were so rare for Jeff Wright's mum, she needed a bit of help to get home again.
We used to go into Louth, and Mum used to go into Louth to do the shopping. When she first started driving, she had to have somebody to turn the car round so she could get back to Cawthorpe.
For some people, coming home wasn't really coming home. It was someone else's home. Families, and especially women, would live in, working in service.
I lived with my auntie because my mum died when I was 4. So she always had a job, what would take a child, living job. So that's we came to Legburn. We lived at the Poplars.
What was your auntie doing there?
She was did all the cleaning, housekeeper for Mr. Davy. He was a bachelor. Arnold Davy.
Paul Moore's granddad was a farm foreman at Kennick, and his grandma worked as a maid at the big house.
He was farm foreman there, and my grandmother used to work as sort of housemaid in the main house. Yeah, it was a lovely place to be. My granddad used to, you know, have an old Thames van with the sliding doors, and his shotgun would be just rested up behind the driver's seat. And we used to go round with him. He was gamekeeper as well as farm foreman, and they were happy days, they were.
Life in those fading days 6 or 7 decades ago was certainly peaceful and mostly quiet, but for some, without transport and minimal bus services, it could be lonely too. Margaret Deforge has lived in Legburn for 63 years.
I was a townie, you see, and I can't drive, and Fred was away, and there was just me, and then eventually we had Sarah, and just me and her in the house, and that's how it was, you know. But it was a bit lonely, really, for me, with not being able to drive and no bus service. If I wanted to go to Louth, I walked. Took them in the pram and walked with it as well.
Life in the rearview mirror. In the next programme, we'll move out of the home. Life will be a bit more recognisable. What brought people here? What charmed them, amused them, entertained them? What kept them here? What they miss? For now, the last word must go to Vic Borrell. In his own lovely way, and with twinkling humour, putting me right, and illustrating exactly how much things have changed. I happened to mention Watery Lane in Little Cawthorpe.
By the way, it's not Watery Lane, it's Back Lane.
When do they call it Watery Lane, then?
When all the posh folks come. Like the other lanes, and they wasn't ever called what they are.
Really?
No. Like Bulston Lane. It was Soapit Lane, because of the Soapit up there. Towels had the Soapit, and they'd also have a blacksmith's shop.
Since the making of this first programme, and just a few weeks after I recorded her, Margaret Hallgarth sadly died at the age of 96. The programme is dedicated to her and to all those no longer with us whose memories have been brought to life here. Next time, Leghorn and Cawthorpe Village Voices, Life and Soul.